Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. As always, this is Techonomics, and I'm the host, Jason Middleton. The next conversation covers some serious human advancements, from movable type to 5G technology. The challenges of the 21st century echo the challenges created by previous network revolutions. That's the hot take from Tom Wheeler. He's former chairman at the FCC under President Obama, and he's now a fellow at the Brookings Institution and visiting lecturer at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. Mr. Wheeler is also father of net neutrality regulations, the very same regulations that the Trump administration is actively trying to dismantle.
The importance of the net neutrality rules is not just that they ban blocking, throttling, and paid prioritization, but they put in place what I call the general conduct rule that said that everything that happens needs to be judged against a just and reasonable standard, because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Right.
But we do need to have somebody, we need a referee on the field who can throw the flag and say, no, that's not just and reasonable.
Mr. Wheeler's new book is titled From Gutenberg to Google, The History of Our Future.
One of the things that worries me about the present administration, the Trump administration, and specifically about the Trump FCC, is that they flee, they run away from dealing with the impact of technological change and retreat back to some halcyon image of the good old days,
right,
when I believe that what made America great was how we stepped up and dealt with the challenges that new technology created instead of running away from them.
In the coming discussion, we cover news, fake news, damn lies, politics, and how guiding principles and not hard, fast rules are needed in this time of rapid technological advancements. And we're going to dip into some antitrust updates, mostly because I need some confirmation bias. Okay, here we go.
Well, good morning, Jason. This is Tom Wheeler. I'm a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution and a senior research fellow at Harvard Kennedy School.
Mr. Wheeler, thank you for your time. Very much looking forward to the discussion we're about to have, but I want to drop a little personal front page on you. First, I had a live show on the day you were announced to become FCC chair under President Obama, and I remember being concerned because I was a privacy advocate. I was a net neutrality advocate, and of course, your background was being a lobbyist for the industry. So that didn't take long for that to dissipate, I have to say. And we're going to talk about net neutrality a little bit later. And I'm also working on a book that was under the working title of The History of What's to Come. The subtitle of your book is The History of Our Future. So I'm going to have to change mine because you beat me to it.
Well, I'm glad I at least gave you some fodder for the show back when I was announced. But the interesting thing is that I was asked this question during my Senate confirmation hearing, and I said to the senators that when I was an advocate for the wireless industry and for the cable industry, they were new, up and coming, competitive choice kind of opportunities. And I hope that I was a good advocate for them, but that the job that I took on as chairman of the FCC was to be an advocate for the American consumer. And I wanted to be the best damn advocate for the consumer that I could be.
And in my humble estimation, sir, you were and remain one of the firebrands of the industry. There was a headline that called you Dragon Slayer at one time. Hey, Tom, let's talk about your book real quick. And then I'm going to talk about some macro stuff with you, if we could. The book is titled From Gutenberg to Google, The History of Our Future. Let's just unpack the title. Why this book? Why now? And who should read?
Well, Jason, we're in the midst of new technology changing the way in which we live our lives, the way in which our economy operates, and it's my belief that at the heart of those changes is how we connect, that the defining factor in human relationships is our connections. And so I decided I'm going to take a look at the great changes in how we connect throughout history. And the first was the original information revolution, which was Gutenberg's movable type printing press.
Right.
And it unlocked knowledge. It created the Reformation. It drove the Renaissance. And then came what we might consider the first high-speed network 400 years later, which was the railroad. Mm-hmm. And it was followed immediately by the telegraph. And those two together, the railroad was the death of distance. From the beginning of history until the middle of the 19th century, geography and distance had ruled the affairs of man. And suddenly the iron horse had overcome that. And then at that same point in time, the telegraph came along and made instantaneous, went even faster, and made instantaneous communications possible.
Right.
And so looking at how those changes affected their time, looking at the impact, looking at how people dealt with them, and then, interestingly enough, Jason, discovering that at the core of each of these earlier revolutions was the seed for the kind of revolution that we're living in today, technologically.
But my only concern is, Tom, coming off the Gutenberg Bible, remember there was a book called the Malleus Maleficarum, which was basically how to hunt a witch. So that was fake news printed on the Gutenberg press that went out. Right. So there's all, I know you're not Pollyanna about this. I know that. But my point is, coming out of each of these revolutions, there was such a social upheaval that sometimes war would also come out. After the Industrial Revolution, World War One was largely because of that result. Are we facing two sides of the coin this time, too?
Well, I mean, you know, let's stop and think that, you know, the Reformation led to decades of war, and it was the printing press that gave Martin Luther the ability to trigger the Reformation in the first place.
That's fair.
I think our challenge is, how do we respond to the impulses created by the new technology? One of the things that worries me about the present administration, the Trump administration, and specifically about the Trump FCC, is that they run away from dealing with the impact of technological change and retreat back to some halcyon image of the good old days,
right,
when I believe that what made America great was how we stepped up and dealt with the challenges that new technology created instead of running away from them.
I do agree with you that the Trump administration seems to be hooked on nostalgia, but what's coming next that we should be watching for? I mean, and your book covers a lot of this: artificial intelligence, virtual reality. That's the book I'm working on, our blockchain, all of these things. Is there a master key to this, or do we need a whole bunch of keys?
Oh, I think that it is naive to think that there is a master key to anything, that how we deal with the results of technological change means we have to have lots of keys and we have to look across a broad spectrum. Here's one of the points that I make in From Gutenberg to Google, is that although I tell the story of network revolutions, what is transformational is not the network itself, but the secondary effects of that network.
Right.
And those secondary effects are distributed broadly. And so we have to look at them in a collective kind of way. I mean, let's take an issue for today. A secondary effect of the digital network revolution is the way in which data has become the asset of the 21st century.
Exactly.
It's allowed us to do all kinds of wonderful things. At the same point in time, it has infringed on our privacy. At the same point in time, it has raised the specter of governmental insight into what we're doing individually. There's no one key that fits all of those. We've got to deal with them serially. and collectively.
When I was taking my notes for this interview, I jotted down, is capitalism in need of a serious update? Let me just lay that question at your feet right now, because if the internet, as I see it, is the nervous system of the 21st century economy, we're staring down the barrel of a 5G network coming at 10 to 100X speeds. How is capitalism going to deal with that?
Boy, what a great question, Jason. And you've hit on one of the things that I really feel strongly about. You know, during the industrial era, we found that the rules that had previously governed an agrarian mercantile society were inadequate for what was happening in industrialization, driven by the railroad, driven by the telegraph. And so we had to come up with a whole new set of rules. And so we came up with the concept of regulatory agencies. We came up with a concept of safe food and drug. We came up with worker safety. We came up with antitrust laws. And those rules ended up putting guardrails on the activities of capitalism, which not only protected consumers, protected competition, protected workers, but also protected capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget that there were these huge debates about, no, capitalism doesn't work anymore. Communism or fascism or socialism has to be the answer. And the rules that were put in place in the industrial era helped protect consumers, protect competition, and protect capitalism. Now we have to look at what's happening in the internet.
Right. Right.
And we have to be saying those rules are no longer sufficient. How do we put new guardrails in place to reflect the new technological realities?
I've laid out some analysis around this. I'm going to throw it at you, and I'd like you to either debunk or, you know, confirmation bias me, if you would. Okay. When it comes to regulation and antitrust, the consumer is not necessarily in harm. These services are largely free. I don't think consumers fully understand what they're paying for or giving up for those services, but they're not really in harm. Costs have actually come down. I would say the antitrust angle is, and I maintain this, we need to oxygenate the markets. We don't know what we're missing out on because these companies are gobbling up all competition before they can sprout real legs. Am I really off on that assessment of what we need to update when it comes to regulating and antitrust?
No, I think you're right, Jason. You have to think about what are the effects. So let's just think for a second.
All right.
If you go back to the 19th century, John D. Rockefeller reduced the price of kerosene by 70%. And kerosene was something that every household in America was using. And his large trusts enabled the prices to go down substantially. Then he leveraged off of that to get a monopoly over all of the oil and petroleum business that then ended up driving up other prices.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're looking at here is free is good, but free is not the be-all and end-all. That it is, what are the effects of the monopoly market power that is created by reducing prices all the way down to free. And one of the challenges that we have in antitrust law today is that I believe that the current Supreme Court, I know that the current Supreme Court and the prevailing concept is that the way in which you make an antitrust decision is on what's called consumer welfare test, the consumer welfare test, which is what's the impact on prices. It used to be before, and this is something that started with Robert Bork back in the Reagan era, but it used to be before that, that Louis Brandeis and other great justices of the Supreme Court were saying, no, the antitrust laws are to protect competition. They protect the functioning of the marketplace. And that has been narrowed down now to saying, well, just what's the impact on consumer prices? Well, when consumer prices get to zero and zero is used to dominate a market and to control the asset of the 21st century, we've got problems.
You've put some meat on the bone when it comes to my analysis. I really appreciate that take on that. We're speaking with former FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler and the present author of From Gutenberg to Google, The History of Our Future. One of the topics in your book that obviously was appealing to me was the news and information part of it, the media part of it. Let me ask a specific question, and you may not be able to answer this. It depends. Is Facebook an unnamed and unregulated media platform, or is it what they claim to be just a platform, a pass-through?
Oh, golly. And I think it's clear that they're not just an engineering company. They're making editorial decisions, or their algorithms are making editorial decisions. And that is the function of a media company, to decide what gets out, to decide who gets what. And that's what Facebook is doing. Clearly, they're a media company.
Okay, good, because they want the margins. They just don't want the responsibility, at least not yet. That's going to have to be forced on them, it seems to me. That's where the government role has been lacking. There's been a giant sucking sound when it comes to lack of activity from regulators. I understand innovators always outpace regulators, but at some point, it has to catch up, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, which probably also means that we need to start rethinking about how we structure government. The government today is structured as a residual of the Industrial Revolution, that we put the kind of government in place to counter the powers in the Industrial Revolution. And we used a management technique that copied the Industrial Revolution. So how did industrialization work? Well, you had a guy on the floor who had to follow a set of rules. And then you had a guy above him who made sure he followed those rules. Then you had a supervisor for a bunch of those managers who made sure everybody was following the rules. And so we turned around and put in place a rules-based bureaucratic structure, and that's how government operates. We now need to start thinking like software companies. You know, I ran a software company years ago, and back in the time when you produced software the same way you produced automobiles, it was a linear process of step by step by step, and then it would fall off the end, and it was finished. It was called the waterfall process. It would fall off the end. Well, that's not the way software is done today. Software is never finished. You know, you're always getting updates. There are always changes taking place that reflect the rapid evolution of what's going on in technology in the marketplace. And we have to begin to think that way in government. And that's a new approach. I tried to do that, for instance, with the net neutrality rules.
Yes.
The importance of the net neutrality rules is not just that they ban blocking, throttling and paid prioritization, but they put in place what I call the general conduct rule that said that everything that happens needs to be judged against a just and reasonable standard. Mm-hmm. Because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Right.
But we do need to have somebody, we need a referee on the field who can throw the flag and say, no, that's not just and reasonable.
Do we have a referee now?
No, we have at the FCC, we have an agency tomorrow, Friday, the 1st of February. There will be argued in the D.C. Court of Appeals an appeal of the Trump FCC's decision to not only abolish the open Internet rule and net neutrality rule, but also to totally walk away from any jurisdiction over broadband Internet connectivity. And that's just insane and irresponsible.
Net neutrality, the open Internet rule, your legacy was the first thing that they pulled back on. Did that piss you off?
It was painful. Jason, but it was not a surprise.
Okay. We're speaking with former FCC Chair Tom Wheeler, his new book, From Gutenberg to Google, The History of Our Future. I want to play a clip for you that's 20 years old from David Bowie, and then we're going to talk just real quick about it. I'm cognizant of your time, and I won't keep you much longer, okay? It's only a 23-second clip.
I don't think we've even seen the tip of the iceberg. I think the potential of what the Internet is going to do to society, both good and bad, is unimaginable. I think we're actually on the cusp of something exhilarating and terrifying.
It's just a tool, though, isn't it?
No, it's not. No. No, it's an alien life form.
What do you think about that? And that's 20 years old, David Bowie. I think he kind of nailed some things there, and I think it really lines up with the purpose of your new book.
I'm not sure about the alien life form.
Right, yeah, that's just Bowie, right?
But in the book, From Gutenberg to Google, I use the same term that David Bowie just used. I say we are on the cusp of. The interesting thing is we have been living through the last multiple decades where technology, where networks, where computers have been developing rapidly, and now they have brought us to a point where the marriage, between ubiquitous computing and ubiquitous connectivity of networks means that we are on the cusp of an entirely new world. And this goes back in part to what we were talking about a minute ago, and that is that we don't know what tomorrow is going to look like.
Right.
And so we can't make rules based on what we know today. We have to make rules based upon principles that we think are enduring and make sure that those principles continue.
My last question, and we're going to have to go broad strokes here because of time constraints, but 5G is coming. That requires infrastructure, engineering, hardware. There's a big fight over it right now. That's what really is happening, I think, with the U.S.-China trade deal, even if Trump doesn't realize what's going on. If you could wave a wand, or if you could put some principles in place for prepping for 5G, do you have any advice for those in power right now?
Well, yes. The networks that connect us have always been attack vectors. I don't care whether it was highways or sea lanes. They've always been attack vectors. So we shouldn't be surprised that the network of the 21st century is a route that people use to attack us. Now, if we know that, how are we going to get in front of that issue rather than playing catch-up ball? And the thing that concerns me is that the Trump administration, and again, the Trump FCC, have walked away from the responsibilities to proactively get cyber protections into 5G. I think what they're doing insofar as infrastructure and whose infrastructure will be used makes a lot of sense in the administration. But what they're not talking about is how will the networks operate? And we know they'll be exploited. Let's deal with that as a forethought rather than an afterthought.
And that plays into your mantra of competition, doesn't it?
Correct.
Mr. Wheeler, I wish we could go deeper, but this has been my great pleasure. I thank you very much for your time. I wish you best with the book and the best moving forward, and I hope that you're FCC chair under the next president.
Jason, thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun.
That was Tom Wheeler. Mr. Wheeler's new book is titled From Gutenberg to Google, The History of Our Future. It's from Brookings Press. Tom is the former chair at the FCC under President Obama. He's now a fellow at the Brookings Institution and visiting lecturer at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. Mr. Wheeler is also father of net neutrality. The pillars of his new book address privacy, marketplace competition, news and information, and internet capitalism versus industrial capitalism. As to the Gutenberg mentioned in the title, here's a great quote that Tom unearthed. They shamefully print at negligible cost material which may, alas, inflame impressionable youths. That's from a 16th century Venetian scribe complaining about the, quote, brothel of the printing press, end quote, which could be a quote from just about anybody who has stumbled on some fake news on the internet. For links to Tom Wheeler, his book, and his bona fides, please just look in the show notes. For executive producer Lee Hammer, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton, with great thanks to Tom Wheeler. This has been Techonomics, and have great weeks, everybody.